Support for Homer Grown comes from Woda Botanicals, a retail store featuring tea, spices, herbal remedies, and books. Plant people focused on food, medicine, and discovery. In downtown Homer and on the web at wodabotanicals.com. Additional support for Homer Grown comes from Wagon Wheel Garden and Pet, providing plants and gardening supplies for South Peninsula's gardeners. Open year-round Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 6, and Saturday, 10 to 5. Learn more at akwagonwheel.com and at 907-235-8777. Hello and welcome to Homer Grown. This is a show about gardening, agriculture, and wild habitat. My name is Desiree Hagen, and I live on a micro farm in Fritz Creek, Alaska. In case you didn't know it, gardening is for everyone, no matter your age or limitations. In this episode, we focus on programs that support inclusivity. Our guests are Jashanna York from the University of Alaska Fairbanks Cooperative Extension Service. She talks about AgriBility, which is a statewide program that supports aging and special needs people working in agriculture. Kira Hardy, the coordinator of the Beginning and Young Alaska Farmers Chapter, talks about the goals of the chapter. And we visit Don McNamara and Donna Ray Faulkner at their farm to talk about how their strawberry gardens are set up to help aging bodies. Let's get started. Have you introduce yourself?
Okay, just with anything, just like my favorite food or whatever. Sorry, I'll try to be on task. So my name is Jashanna York, and I work for the University of Alaska Fairbanks Cooperative Extension Service in the Anchorage office.
So tell me about AgriBility. What is that?
Yeah, so AgriBility is a USDA-funded project. It's a grant-funded project awarded to cooperative extension services around the nation as a competitive grant. And Alaska applied for the grant just about 4 years ago, and we, for the first time, were funded. And the project is about assisting folks that work in agricultural careers to help them if they might have an impairment of some sort, disability, or just having the effects of aging taking place to help them do the tasks of the type of work within agriculture.
So you said that this has been, you know, you applied or started applying 4 years ago, or did you get the...
Yeah, so we applied for the competitive grant with USDA 4 years ago. We were awarded. It's a four-year funded project. So we're in our first funding cycle for the project. And we've applied for another set of funding, which we're hoping to hear about very soon. And so the project was new to Alaska when we applied for that first set of funding 4 years ago.
So you said that you serve older or impaired?
Yeah, so the project is really targeted to work with anyone who's in an agriculture career position. So that could be farming, it could be commercial fishing, it can be timber industry, even folks that are working in like a farmer's market type of business, that would qualify as well. So anyone who's working with an agriculture that has a business tied to that is really the number one target for the grant. So what we do is a couple of different things. We offer a direct service with AgriBility by where we can do assessments of an operation that someone has in agriculture. So we have an occupational therapist go on site to do an assessment of the operation, whatever that is, right? If it's fishing, timber, or farming, assess the tasks that the individual is doing and see what type of equipment or other types of resources they might need to help them do that work. Specifically targeted to the aspect if they have an injury. So if someone had an injury from an accident or just from the effects of aging over time, agriculture is a very repetitive type of work. Commercial fishing and farming is very repetitive tasks, and those things can wear on your body. And so at times, you know, there might be some assistance that's needed to keep you available to do that work.
You talked about equipment. So is this like you're providing modifications to the equipment or new equipment, or what does that look like?
Yeah. So when we go out to an operation and do an assessment, then we have a report that talks about the different types of tasks that are being done at that operation. And then what we do is make recommendations for just what you said, modifications of tasks, like the way the process is being done to ease the repetitive, you know, sort of use of the body that's being done, or equipment that might help and aid in that. So it might be to modify, for example, an ATV, if someone is using that on their farm to do tasks to help, you know, water or do things on their farm. It might be looking at ways to assist with getting up and down in and out of equipment, if it was a tractor or something like that. It also may be looking for efficiencies where someone can utilize like timed water systems and things of that nature, so they're not having to move hoses and move gear as often. So utilizing what we call assistive technology, which really means any type of equipment or technology that helps someone do a task. And so it could be a whole wide range of things.
And so you're serving people throughout the state?
Yes, this is a statewide project. That is true. Yep.
Do you have any, I guess, would you call them clients?
Yes, we do. So if someone contacts me that is in doing, you know, an agricultural career type of position, that doesn't mean that they have to be an owner. They could also be just an operator or someone who works in an ag operation. So it could be a deckhand in commercial fishing, or it could be someone who works on a farm. They don't have to own the farm. So if they're working in an ag career at all, they could contact me, and then we can talk with them about this assessment we're talking about and what types of things might be needed. And then we go from there.
Do you have any information about how many people you are currently serving?
Yeah, we've picked up, I think we probably have talked with, I think we have about 20 clients that we've talked with off and on. Some of the clients may have a small thing that they need done, and it's a quick, you know, we come in, we do an assessment, and we provide them information, and then we can get them some tools or some type of equipment they need. And then that's kind of all they need at the moment, but they can always call back with us. Some of our other clients have a lot of ongoing things that may be needed, and so we're talking about bigger projects or modifications. The other thing I should mention is that the AgriBuilty project funds the direct service I talked about, which has to do with the assessment that is on site for the operation. We partner with Assistive Technology of Alaska to seek and look for funding and other resources for clients that we have in order to provide funding for equipment and things of that nature. The grant doesn't pay for direct equipment purchase, but we have connections through Assistive Technology of Alaska and other resource options that we can look for to get funding, including a relationship nationally with the Farmer Veteran Coalition, and they have some grants and things for veterans as well.
Can you describe specifically some of the tools?
Sure. So we have a wide range of different things that could be utilized as assistive technology. It could be something small in nature, such as anti-vibration gloves or gloves that people could wear that assist with holding on to tools when they're doing repetitive work for arthritis, if they have carpal tunnel, if they have gripping issues, things of that nature. But we also have larger types of technologies that exist, such as I mentioned, modifications for like a tractor or an ATV or other types of things like that. So it can be from low to high tech, as we say. So low tech may be just a glove that helps with that vibration, or like I talked about with the gripping, or it could be all the way up to someone needing to be able to have assistance with getting up into like a tractor or something like that. So there's a whole wide range. So on the AgriBuilty national website there's something called the Toolbox, and folks can go on that, and there's about 2,800 or so different types of tools that are listed there and different assistive technologies as we were mentioning earlier. So you can go onto that database and type in a type of activity. So it could be fishing, farming, etc., and it'll keyword pull up all these types of tools that might be utilized to assist with different tasks. In addition, you can also type in a body part, for example, neck, shoulder, knee, and it'll pull up tools and different types of equipment that would assist in those specific, you know, joints and things like that. So it's a great resource.
Okay, so let's say that I am a person who needs these services. Can you walk me through the steps that I would take to apply for this grant?
So you would just call me at the Cooperative Extension Service, as AgriAbility is part of the UAF Cooperative Extension Service. I would talk with you about your operation, what you're growing, what types of tasks you need to have done. We would then figure out a time to set up for that direct service assessment with an occupational therapist, and then walk through that. You are, as a client, always driving the decisions about the goals and the tasks and the things that you need to get done. So you're really in the driver's seat. We are there to help and assist you with what you need. And so after we do that assessment, then we have a variety of data at our disposal that we can use to look for that funding I was talking about to get you equipment and things like that.
So Homer's on the road system, so it's probably easier for people in Homer to get, you know, somebody to come and assess their situation. Is there a way that you're handling people that live in rural communities?
Yeah, so since this is a statewide project, we're interested in reaching as many people as we can. We do have a couple of clients that are actually off the road system. So really, yes, it's a possibility to have those assessments done. It's just a bit of coordination with the client and our office to get that done. So we would just set that up, determine what the accessibility is, and get out to that operation to be able to do that. And you're right, on the road system is a little bit easier, but we also service all of Alaska. Last year, I actually did a bit of a road trip, and we actually went to a variety of operations, and a lot of them were on the road system, basically Delta all the way here to Homer, and did assessments on operations in different circumstances.
Are you free to give your number on the air for people to contact?
Sure, absolutely. So again, Deshanna York in the Cooperative Extension Service Anchorage office. My number is 786-6330, or folks can email me at ddyork@alaska.edu.
Is there anything else that you wanted to say or that I've left out?
Let me just say one other thing about AgriAbility. So as I mentioned, it's a USDA-funded project that does provide direct assistance with assessments, but we also do education, training, and other resource connect to refer folks to those services that they need. So we work with a variety of different groups, and one of those is veterans, and veterans is a target for what we want to provide service for. So we're in conversation with like the Veterans Administration and Vocational Rehab to assist folks and that. So we're working with all the different groups that are involved with agriculture in the state. So whether that's tribal, veterans, workers of operations, those folks would qualify as well.
How about a typical client?
To give you an example of some of the clients that we're working with folks that might have a small specialty crop that are just selling to the farmers market, all the way to folks who are raising livestock like bison or yaks. So we've been to operations where we have peony farmers that are walking through their steps in operation from, you know, all the maintenance that happens over the summer, and then also with their very quick harvest period and all the tasks that happen with that, because it's very intense, right, over a short period of time, all the way to how to safely handle loading livestock to take to slaughterhouse, et cetera, and being able to do that if you have an injury or an impairment, like if you have a knee replacement or a back issue. A lot of this work is really word of mouth. And that's really how people learn from each other and hear the stories and things of that nature. We do have some profiles that we're putting together about our clients so people can see that and see more of, you know, get an idea of what the potential is. So we have worked with, for example, Ron and Margie Illingworth. They are at North pull panties, and we have a profile sheet on them, and we're actually doing some other profiles of our clients so folks can get a real good idea of the types of tangibles that come out of this project.
Yeah, you said that there was 2,800 tools. I mean, are there any that are super specialized or, you know, just really neat ones that you were like, oh, wow, what is this thing? And
yeah, there's so many. It really, you know, what's really interesting about the assistive technology is depending on the type of need of the individual, there is a whole entire like work product that's associated with people that also, in addition to things you can buy, that people are also just DIYing, that actually low-tech technologies that are being built. And some examples, like here in Homer at Oceanside Farms, there's like a collaborative that's going on with Agribility and Soil and Water Conservation District with a specialty crop grant to look at ways of modifying growing systems for strawberries that allows for people to not have to bend over and stoop when they're picking and harvesting as often and things like that. So just to answer that question, there's a lot of things that are sold that could be utilized, like hand tools, things for your back, support units for back and neck and things like that when you're doing a lot of tasks. But there's also a ton of modification that's going on that's fabricated to just grow and do things differently so people don't have to stoop, reach, and, you know, constantly be up and down on ladders and things like that as well.
Is there any information about how many Alaskan farmers or people that work in agriculture, fisheries, are older or have limitations? Do a lot of people that work in these industries, mm-hmm. are they older? Do they have something that impairs them?
Yeah. So just by virtue of repetitive work and aging, we're seeing a lot of that. And a lot of folks that are working in agriculture, not all, but a lot, are aging, sort of like, you know, we talk about the fishing fleet is aging and a lot of farmers are aging. And this is that transition. What's the succession planning for the farm and the operation? But I will say that this project really is not only about aging, because anyone can have an injury of any age. It could be unrelated to agriculture. It could be that someone was in a car accident or had an issue with something. They might have been doing some kind of recreational activity and sprained their knee or did something like that. And then over time, that kind of gets worse or develops arthritis. So it's not all about age, but aging does affect many things. So we do have publications and information about gardening and also basically working in agriculture and modifying if you have arthritis. But anyone at any age, if you have an injury, can develop arthritis. And then as you're doing repetitive work and tasks, that just exacerbates those issues. But yes, it is also known, I don't have a percentage, but it's also known that a lot of folks are, you know, that are working in these industries are aging in that way.
Told that there's no stupid questions, but this
no, so, no, there isn't. I don't think there is. If there is, I'm probably asking them.
So these are, you know, tools for physical work, but what if somebody had another, like maybe mental or other types of impairments?
Yeah, that is absolutely not a stupid question. That's an amazing question, because what I failed to mention is that Agribility is, yes, it's not all about mobility. There are lots of things that folks encounter or have to work through that are not even physical or visual, right? And so some of that comes down to veterans that might be working in agriculture that have PTSD or a TBI or some other types of situations. We've had also clients that have things like MS, and those can cause mobility issues, but they're not always manifested in that way initially. So absolutely good question. And there's a lot of things that are going on now with Hort therapy, types of training and certifications that people are doing. And we're exploring doing some of that with, I'm in Anchorage, so we're exploring looking into some horticulture therapy partnerships with different folks to also do some webinars, but also put together some areas where those things can be demonstrated at like the senior center or at the Anchorage Botanical Garden. And it may be that we could find a facility or a location partner here in Homer to do that as well. So that absolutely is, that's an excellent point.
Yes.
I didn't mention it, but I should have. Mental health is huge. And I think that's a very important piece to the work we're doing as well. But also, I mean, it really, in talking with veterans and things, you know, again, a lot of the challenges that we face or they face or anyone faces are not necessarily seen, and often they're not seen. So it's not all about, like you said, a physical thing that you can see. It's really also about the whole person. And aggravability really truly is about the whole person. It's really a multifaceted approach to look at the whole entire individual. Yes, it's their tasks that they're doing, but like what other facets of their life are impacted, and are there things that we can help with that? Because really, these types of occupations often are full families are involved, or it's an operation that is a very big part of your life. It's not a 9-to-5 that you go to the office and you go home and you're done. You're often living on the operation, or you're absolutely immersed in it, right? So we really aim to look at the whole entire person and their operation and their family or whoever's working with them. Yes, it's about getting the task done and helping with that, but it's also about making sure they have the other resources they need as well, to include mental health. Aggravability also has a partnership with the Western Region Farm Stress Group, and we're really looking at mental health as a huge piece, and we're really looking at mental health overall and having resources available to farmers when it comes to mental health. There's a very high percentage of suicide rate within the farming industry. So we're really concerned about that. There's a suicide hotline as well. And we're definitely focused on mental health.
The suicide hotline is specifically for farmers?
Mm-hmm. The Aggravability Program is part of the Western Regional Agricultural Stress Assistance Program. We are very focused on mental health within agricultural careers. And there is a National Suicide Prevention Lifeline that folks can call 24 hours at 1-800-273-8255 if they'd like to talk with someone and just have a conversation about their situation. We believe in working together to cultivate rural resilience for all, including farmers, ranchers, and agricultural workers as they navigate increasing stress.
Is this type of work something that you have a personal stake in?
I would say yes. I grew up commercial fishing, and I know from that perspective what that type of work does as far as a repetitiveness, and how that is repetitive work that, yes, growing up commercial fishing, I know what it's like to have a business operation that's part of your just very livelihood and all of who you are. Back to what I said earlier, it's not a 9-to-5 that you go to. This type of work is a family operation, and so you're immersed in that work. And so my family was for like close to 20 years as well. And so doing that kind of work is hard labor, but it gets in your blood, and it's very much a labor of love. And so really what I'm interested in and what this project is interested in is continuing to allow folks to do the work they love and that they want to do, for as long as hopefully they can.
And that was DeShanna York, recorded June 4th, 2022. Coming up next, we visit Oceanside Farms and talk with Don McNamara and Donna Ray Faulkner about their strawberry beds. And I have to brag, this was a homegrown first. The first, but not the last time, carrying all the recording equipment on my bicycle to an interview. Okay, so can you introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Don McNamara at Oceanside Farms with my sweet wife, Donna Ray.
Hi.
So I wanted to know about your strawberry towers.
Well, we're doing a really cool thing at the farm this year. We're experimenting with growing easier. As we're getting a little older, we're realizing we can't do everything, and so we're trying to make it easy on ourselves. So we have three different styles of strawberry towers. The first one we call Food Taco, and it is a chunk of metal roofing zincalume, which is the better of all the roofing colors to use for eating and drinking purposes. If you're going to have some gutters or a metal roof, zincalume would be the one you want to use. But anyways, it's just a U-shaped piece of tin as a 24-inch wide and 12-inch deep gutter, basically. And it's about 3 feet off the ground, so you can just stand there at waist height and work on your little strawberry plants. So it's perfect.
So that's the taco, but did you say that there were other?
Yeah, so we have three styles, and the second style is the rain gutter. And so we have T-post and 2x4s and then rain gutter mounted to them. And three different levels, so three gutters on each pile of stakes, as you will, and it's coming along pretty darn good. And so we'll get a lot of plants in there. They're 25 feet long, so that's about 25 plants per, so about 75 plants in a row. And the third style is a little bit taller. Instead of, this one's vertical instead of horizontal, so we got some 6-inch PVC pipe and drilled a hole and then cut between the two holes and warmed it up and stuffed a wine bottle in there and made a little poochie for the plants to go in. And so there's about 17 plants on each chunk of pipe. So every 30 inches there's 17 plants. So a little bit more production, but a little bit more horsing around.
So you stuck a wine bottle?
Yeah, so you warmed up the PVC pipe, and then when it got hot enough to bend, you could push a wine bottle right in there, and then it cooled and left a little poochie on the chunk of pipe.
And then is the rest of the pipe filled with soil?
Yeah, so we're soil farmers, so that's what we do, is grow in soil. So we filled it, we built our own soil with sand and peat from the road that went across from Kachemak Gear Shed, and our compost and a little bit of perlite. And then for some nutrients, we're adding blood meal, bone meal, green sand, azomite, a little bit of Epsom salts, and a little bit of borax soap. And some lime, of course.
What does the borax do?
The borax is boron, but everything in moderation, so that's like a quarter of a tablespoon per 20 gallons of soil.
And how did you come up with the ideas for these?
Let's see, it's a food taco. We were just over in Hawaii this winter going to school, learning Korean natural farming, and Drake had that style at his place. And so we brought it back to Alaska, introduced it to everybody. The Vanderweels are doing the gutter system with strawberries at his farm in Palmer, and so we borrowed his ideas. And then I think we just saw the towers on YouTube, that with the wine bottle warming them up and that kind of stuff. So haven't seen anybody around here doing it. They're pretty expensive if you buy them, and they take about an hour a piece if you make them.
What else is there? Or did you guys get any grants for this, or is it fully funded, just you guys built them yourselves?
Yep, and so we did a small crop block
grant.
Specialty crop block grant, Donna Ray says. And so they're helping out with the materials.
USDA.
Yeah, and so we're supplying all the soils and materials, and well, we're supplying the labor.
I'm gonna back you up for a second, sorry. The Homer Soil and Water Conservation District got a specialty crop block grant from the USDA and the Division of Ag, and we are their producers under that grant. I'm working with Homer Soil and Water Conservation District.
Do you know what that bird is? The one that makes the sound that's like, I'm so sad.
That one?
Yeah.
Isn't that our golden crown sparrow?
Golden crown sparrow.
Yes.
It is.
He's a troublemaker. He's got a mohawk, so.
That's why we have netting over the doors of our high tunnels, is because of the golden crown sparrows that come in and want to snip a plant here and there and that sort of thing, or grab a strawberry.
So am I missing anything?
It's a whole lot of work.
I mean, but the goal was to kind of make the work easier, right?
Yeah, to make less stress on your body while you're farming. Mm-hmm. So handicapped people for the food taco is perfect. They were using it with the disabled veterans in Hawaii. And so it's a really, when we go up and see it, you'll say, oh yeah, that's, I want one. And they're pretty inexpensive to do, all in all. They take about a half yard of soil in a 10-foot bed.
At the end of this year, after we look at all the strawberries and how it all worked out, we'll be building a structure, one of the chosen structures that worked out best for the Kenai Food Bank and also for
Anchor Point Seniors. Is that right?
Ooh, I'm not sure who the other one is. For another senior facility.
So we're doing a strawberry trial on top of that to see which ones will overwinter out of the soil. So it's got to be pretty darn hardy to freeze solid and then wake up in the spring and get back to work. And so we're doing Albion and Seascape and Jewel is the one we've been growing all the whole time. And
Galetta.
The Sitka berry grows pretty much all over the state, and some of these varieties that you get from the nurseries and whatnot, they're not quite for our climate. So we planted 500 Jewel strawberries and 450 died. So of those 50 strawberries that lived, we've been propagating those, and now we have a couple thousand plants of strawberries producing.
They grow really, really well, but it really is a lot of work to crawl around on the ground with the raised beds and have all the runners and have all the things that you have to deal with to harvest. So these vertical and horizontal towers will be great.
Don McNamara and Donna Rae Faulkner recorded at Oceanside Farms on June 6th, 2022. Coming up next, we talk to Kira Hardy, the coordinator of the Beginning and Young Farmers chapter. Can you introduce yourself?
Yeah, hi, I'm Kira Hardy. Who am I in this interview? Who do you want me to be?
I want you to give context to why I'm talking to you.
Which is for the Beginning and Young Alaskan Farmers chapter. So yeah, I'm the coordinator for that project. I'm contracted through AFMA, Alaska Farmers Market Association, to execute this project.
What was the name of it again? The
Alaska Farmers, Alaska Farmers Market Association.
No, the program that you are initiating.
Beginning and Young Alaskan Farmers Chapter. And that's not like a hard and fast name. That's just kind of a name, like a title I'm trying to bait people with. Once it forms, we will come together to decide what it's actually called.
What is the purpose of it?
The purpose.
It doesn't, maybe not the purpose, but like why is there a need for this?
Yeah, I've been apprenticing as a farm, or I've been living with a lady for about 5 years, and she's been teaching us, my partner and I, how to farm. And I'm sold. I want to farm. And recently I've kind of taken on a new role in the food systems where I've done, you know, marketing. I'm also the coordinator for the Alaska Food Hub. And I just feel like I'm in this new position of information highways. And thinking about starting a farm is really overwhelming when you think about, you know, they're marketing their stuff, they're figuring out how to grow, finding out funding, prioritizing grants, figuring out what land you're going to farm, acquiring that land, skill sharing. Yeah, figuring out so many different things that I was like, if I'm struggling with this and I feel relatively capable and I have all of these advisors to me, then other people must feel this way too. And it would be great to network with other people and share that information. So that was kind of the birth of the project.
So what actions are you taking?
Well, right now I have a survey out and a call to action for beginning and young, and beginning and young meaning an experienced thing. So if you're a farmer or like a farm apprentice or someone who is in a midlife career shift, so if you have 10 years or less of experience, we're asking you to take our survey if you're interested in networking with people who are in a similar situation as a beginning and young farmer, or maybe a better term is a new farmer. So the survey is designed to just kind of figure out what we would want as a chapter, like as a network of people, what would we want that to be? So whether it's skill sharing or helping us write policy.
So this is a statewide organization.
Mm-hmm.
So you're reaching out to people throughout the state.
Mm-hmm. One of my goals was to at least have input from people from every region around the state, just to see what they would want from a chapter like this, whether it's like policy, skill sharing, or like if we're all close enough together, like, you know, obviously there's lots of new and beginning farmers here in Homer. The Kenai Peninsula is blowing up with new farmers, tons of new high tunnels. You know, could we all come together and collectively have buying power? It's really open-ended. And that's what the survey is there to help me design what we want.
So have you had any feedback from others that are outside of the Kenai Peninsula?
Yeah, I've had maybe like 4 in Palmer area, in the Valley area, a couple in Ketchikan, a few in Haines, a few in Fairbanks.
So it sounds like this is sort of on the ground floor, kind of.
Definitely.
What do you, you know, in your like dream of dreams, what do you want to come out of this? Like what would be the best possible outcome? What do you envision for the future?
I hope that all of these different regions will start communicating better with each other, and people who are in similar situations can form their own chapter. Initially, first just trying to like capture all of us in the entire state, but then like that's a very wide scope, and narrowing it back down into our little regions and really just focusing it from there.
Are you finding any similarities between the needs of beginning and young farmers in general?
Acquiring land is a big problem. I think people really want to have in-person Skillshare. So that's the narrowing the focus again. So we have like this big network of initiating this network of young farmers and giving essentially like a model of how this works and getting us all talking about what we need in our communities. Then once we have this network established, our organizations like Alaska Farmers Market Association, Alaska Food Policy Council, and Alaska Land Trust and other existing nonprofits or organizations can tap that network and spread information.
Do you have any plans coming up in the future for where you want to take the program?
I'm mostly just excited to get to know my farmer and my peer and see what they're doing.
Okay, so what have we missed?
I wish my brain wasn't hurting so bad right now.
I can, like, feel the hurt.
I'm sorry.
Oh, man.
What we're missing right now is that this chapter is based off of a national nonprofit called National Young Farmers Coalition, and their mission is to shift power and change policy to equitably resource our new generation of working farmers. So that's kind of like the model that this project is based off of. They have this big structure, and in that big structure, they have chapters that are farmer-led for farmers, and it's giving a voice to new farmers for the next generation.
Have you done any research or looked into any other chapters around the country and looked at them as models?
Yeah, and they're all very different. Some of them are networks, like how this like statewide thing is kind of the formation of that or similar to that. And then there are other ones that are just literally coming together to share resources and essentially share shipping costs with different things. Others are there to just have to formate work parties. Others are there to form an actual co-op within their own regions. So it's really open-ended. And so once this chapter, the statewide chapter, is formed, we will then come together, put our heads together, and decide what our mission is and what our goals are and some of our objectives. And maybe then that will start breaking apart this project further. I mean, I imagine that to be in good standing with this national nonprofit, you have to have 10 due paying members.
Where are you now?
Well, I definitely have 16 people that are interested, and that's throughout the entire state. But I personally know, like, probably 15.
How much are dues?
I think they're $40.
Ooh, I think I might have two 20s on me. That's a lie, I don't. Okay, so let's see. Yeah, I wonder if with this chapter, if like various, you know, arts organizations and hunting organizations, all kinds of organizations, they have, you know, they need an organization in order to be able to get these national grants.
The National Young Farmers Coalition does have different grants that are for chapters or for individual farmers who are dues paying, because you can be a due paying member without being a part of a chapter, but they're small and very meaningful for people who are starting off. But yeah, like big USDA grants and stuff. That's why I think it's so important and why I've initiated this relationship, or the relationship was initiated with me as well. It was very mutual. The Alaska Farmers Market Association, we're tucked underneath their wings, and they're taking care of us and are helping start this project.
Did I say that weird?
No, I was trying to think of like a way to keep the bird metaphor, but I couldn't come up with anything right quick.
A seed metaphor would have been better. They're germinating us.
Is there a way that people can get in contact with you or with the organization?
Yes. If you want to learn more, you can call me at 907-235-4068, extension 20.
Can you say that one more time?
Mm-hmm. 907-235-4068, extension 20. Or you can email me at kyra@alaskafarmersmarket.org.
K-Y-R-A?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of I hate this email. kyra@alaskafarmersmarket.org.
Okay. Great. And that was Kyra Hardy, the coordinator of the Beginning and Young Alaska Farmers Chapter. That interview was recorded June 7th, 2022. Coming up next, Nicole Arevalo has your wrap-up of events and opportunities in local and statewide agriculture.
Soil and Water with this week's roundup of news and tidbits on local agriculture and wild habitat too. There's so much to share this week, it was tough fitting it all into this segment, but here goes. Yesterday was the 50th anniversary celebration at the Wagon Wheel Garden and Pet. They had hourly drawings, hot dogs on the grill, broke out their big photo album, and had a poster that people could sign for Barb. Show your love for the Wagon Wheel by swinging down there after you hit the farmer's market and check out that photo album full of memories from their past 50 years serving Homer area communities. And yes, that's right. The Homer Farmer's Market is now open every Saturday from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. and on Wednesdays from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. Farmers are bringing crops and fermented foods, and you can also find fresh baked bread. Get your kitchen knives sharpened. Get lunch with halibut tacos or Indian and Middle Eastern food, and you can still find a wide variety of flower and vegetable starts ready to add to your home garden. Besides the Homer Farmers Market, we lucky folks on the Kenai Peninsula also have our online farmers market, the Alaska Food Hub. Open every week from Friday through Monday for Wednesday pickups in Homer, Saldovia, Nanilchik, and Soldotna. Visit alaskafoodhub.org for the fresh offerings each week. If you're a grower and you think you might be interested in USDA NRCS's programs and services that help people responsibly grow crops on their land, like the high tunnel and irrigation programs, a good first step is to check out the Alaska NRCS website. Their services are free and open to all landholders who want to grow crops on their land in ways that build and protect healthy soil and the natural habitat around them. Just search for NRCS Alaska in your search engine. On the website, you can also check out some great success stories of Alaskans who have utilized NRCS to help them innovate and build up Alaska's regenerative food system. I can attest that there are some really interesting stories on there, including ones from people innovating right here on the Southern Kenai Peninsula and who you may have heard interviewed here on Homer Ground. Check it out. Along that vein, here's another thing to check out. On June 18th, the Pratt Museum is hosting an in-person workshop on cultivating wild plants into your garden. Taught by Sean Jakinski, Pratt head gardener and Nanilchik area homesteader, and Homer Grown alum, Sean's going to be talking about how to incorporate beautiful Alaskan wildflowers or unique alpine plants into your home garden. This includes creating the right soil and setting for coastal plants, alpine plants, bog plants, and more. They'll explore how to make cuttings and divisions so you can propagate plants in the field and eventually share plants from your garden with your friends. You'll also get to take home a small potted plant from the Pratt's own garden at the end of the day. Space is limited, so registration is suggested. The Pratt is also hosting weekly garden and forest tours of their botanical garden, homestead garden, and forest trails. Throughout the summer, Thursdays and Saturdays at 11 a.m. and 4 p.m. Speaking of Kenai Peninsula plant life and wild things, for all of us who like the Kenai Peninsula habitat just the way it is, this coming week, June 12th through 18th, is Alaska Invasive Species Awareness Week. Here are a few ways you can use this opportunity to learn about and share observations about invasive and native plants in our area. Check out the website, alaskapestreporter.org. This is a citizens monitoring portal where you can report on plants and other species you suspect might be non-native to our area. Another great resource is the Kenai Peninsula Invasive Species Management Area. Check out their website or Facebook page to learn how to recognize invasives around the peninsula. Another handy tool, the Alaska Weeds ID app, used to help you identify if that plant you came across is invasive in Alaska, has gotten a new name and is now called the Alaska Invasives ID app. This is because you can now use it to ID insects and other invasive species too. And on June 15th, there is a webinar on how to use the phone app iNaturalist. Learn to use iNaturalist and become a part of local research projects. Alaska Native Plant Society Treasurer Aaron Wells will lead this workshop and show you how to use iNaturalist to share your plant observations, provide identifications, and participate in iNaturalist projects like the Flora of Chugach State Park and the upcoming 2022 Alaska Botany BioBlitz. Check out the Alaska Native Plant Society's website or Facebook page for more. Lastly, here's one for all the fishermen and oyster farmers out there. This summer, there's an opportunity for local fishermen and ocean farmers to contribute to a citizen science project and record their ocean observations via the Skipper Science phone app. Are you a fisherman or ocean farmer who could contribute your knowledge and observations? Or do you know one who could? If you sign up and log your first observation by July 1st, you will be entered to win a $500 gift card for LFS. Five winners will be announced in October, and each observation uploaded will enter your name in the drawing pool and increase your chance to win. To learn more and sign up for the Skipper Science app, visit skipperscience.org. There's more, but I've run out of time. For more news and tidbits on opportunities for enthusiasts of local agriculture, sign up for our Ag Updates monthly e-newsletter. Sign up on the Homer Soil and Water Conservation District website. And to get the June edition, just released today, email me at Nicole, that's N-I-C-O-L-E, at homerswcd.org.
So every Homer Grown, I edit Nicole's rundown of current happenings in agriculture. And most of these segments are recorded at the last minute to provide the most up-to-date information, and certainly not because Nicole and I are both procrastinators. So on Friday night, when most of the magic late-night editing happens, Nicole came in after drinking a full pot of coffee and knocked that segment out of the park. I just had to mention this. The editing was such a joy. There was minimal mouth noises, and all of her profanities were poetic. Just listen to the joy in her voice.
Dunsky, baby!
Oh, that makes me smile. So, thank you, coffee. That's our show. want to thank our guest, Deshauna York from the University of Alaska Fairbanks Cooperative Extension Service, who talked about agribility. Also to Don McNamara and Donna Ray Faulkner, thank you. It was great to visit your farm and also check out the strawberries. Thank you, Kira Hardy, for coming and talking about the Beginning and Young Alaska Farmers Chapter. I look forward to our trip to Kodiak. Now we just got to make it happen. Thank you to Homer Soil and Water Conservation District and co-producer Nicole Revelo. Also, thanks to the band Trial and Terror, as well as Kevin Cope and Ryan Black for providing our music. Homer Grown recently received a grant to cover stories about rural agriculture. So if you know of any ag projects that are happening off the road system, please send me an email. We would love to cover these stories. Comments, questions, suggestions can be directed to Desiree, that's D-E-S-I-R-E-E, at kbbi.org. I've been your host, Desiree Hagen, reminding you to support your local farmer. Support for Homer Grown comes from Woda Botanicals, a retail store featuring tea, spices, herbal remedies, and books. Plant people focused on food, medicine, and discovery. In downtown Homer and on the web at wodabotanicals.com. Additional support for Homer Grown comes from Wagon Wheel Garden and Pet, providing plants and gardening supplies for South Peninsula's gardeners. Open year-round Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 6, and Saturday, 10 to 5. Learn more at akwagonwheel.com and at 907-235-8777.